Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 11, Sugar Rush. Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast. I'm Roger, your host, and this is the show that's dedicated to helping aspiring home cooks grow their skills and confidence in the kitchen so they can start cooking up memories with family and friends. Thanks for downloading and listening to this episode. Before we get into the main part of the show, I do want to say thanks. I did get another review on iTunes, so I just wanted to do a quick shout out and say thanks to that person. And I don't know exactly how to say this, so I'll say it two ways, and hopefully one of them's right. It's either P. Hepper or Fepper. I don't know which, but thank you so much for leaving a review on iTunes. And if any of the rest of you would like to do that, you can head over to iTunes, search for the Kitchen Counter Podcast, and you can subscribe to the show so you don't miss any future episodes and leave a review if you'd like. And of course, if you don't subscribe or don't do the iTunes thing, you can also find the show on Stitcher Radio online and TuneIn Radio online, so you can follow us there so you don't miss any future episodes. And if you'd like to get in touch with me directly, if you'd like to send an email, you can send me one to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. Today, I have a returning guest on the show to talk about some sweet stuff, my wife, Tracy. Welcome back, Tracy.
Thanks for having me on again. I must not have done too bad of a job last time since you invited me back.
No, you did a good job. And I gave you feedback. People liked you on that episode, on episode 8, when we talked about chocolate, what we talk about, biscotti and some yummy
chocolate cookies, yeah.
So today we're kind of on a related note, but not quite the same. We're going to be talking about candy and making some candy at home. And we tried out a couple of things. We tried to make pralines and salted caramel.
Hey, you said pralines right.
I know. I'm sure I have somebody in the South who was waiting or would have corrected pralines. Me. Pralines. I say pralines. I interchange them. I say pralines. You say pralines. Caramel is another one. How do you say it?
Caramel.
Caramel. Yeah. Some like, people say caramel. I say caramel.
Yeah. Like Carmel Beach. No, wait. Kirk. What beach is that? Carmel?
Carmel, California. Yeah, just like that.
So we're going to be sharing sugar rushes with family and friends this time.
Yeah. A couple of things. I thought it would be fun since it is prior to, we're in full swing of the holiday season. Christmas hasn't happened yet as we record this. It's December 15th. This will probably be the last show before Christmas. I don't think I'll be able to get another one out before Christmas. So I thought it would be a good idea to maybe do another sweet candy episode for the folks that might be looking for something for Christmas time.
Something to make for Christmas, something to give for Christmas.
Exactly. And so this is kind of fun because I've mentioned before on the show, I'm not much of a baker. I can only bake a couple of things, really. You're much more of a baker than I am. But candy making is kind of a little bit different.
Yeah, I wouldn't call candy making baking at all. Because when you think about baking, it's, you know, baking in the oven.
But here's how I think they're kind of related. It's almost like the third thing you do in the kitchen besides...
Clean.
the fourth thing you do in the kitchen besides bake and cook. So when you cook, there's some leeway, you know what I mean? There's chemistry involved and stuff, but you can kind of correct as you're making your dish, or you can season it more or stop seasoning it. You can add things, you can change things. With baking, you kind of have to get everything together in the exact right proportions and quantities, put them together, bake it, and wait and hope it turns out right. It's so much different than cooking. So candy making is kind of weird because it's kind of that active involvement of cooking. But it's very precise.
Very, very precise. Much more precise than baking. Everyone says baking is precise, and it is. But boy, candy making is really precise.
Yeah. And so right off the bat, we should probably mention, if you don't already have one, and if you're going to try these recipes, or really any candy making at home, you should probably get yourself a candy thermometer.
Yeah. I've gone through a few different candy thermometers over time. And I've always gone and gotten just a cheap candy thermometer. And it usually lasted one season because I just don't take care of it well, get water in it when I'm cleaning it, for whatever reason. And we got a really good candy thermometer this time, which was really good, cost what, all of $15?
$15, yeah.
Yeah, and what's nice about it, I think probably most candy thermometers are like this now, but it has a little stop on it so you can set it on the bottom of the pan. And so the tip of the thermometer doesn't touch the pan that way. So that's one that I've never had before. So that's nice.
Right. Because typically with an inexpensive candy thermometer, you're supposed to not let it touch the bottom of the pan because the bottom of the pan will be a lot hotter than the contents in the pan and you'll get an incorrect reading.
Yeah. And a lot of times when you're making candy, a lot of, you know, there's not a lot of quantity in the pan. So you have to be pretty careful about where the tip of that thermometer is.
And the reason also I would say you have to get a thermometer, I guess there's other ways you can test your candy making. So there's different.
If you're experienced, if you really know what you're doing.
Right. And I should have brought the thermometer in to record. But basically there's different stages of candy making. There's like soft crack and hard crack, softball, hardball. There's such ridiculous sounding names. But basically they're just descriptions physically of what the candy will do if you stop cooking it at that temperature. Is that a good description?
Mm-hmm.
So one of the ways apparently, and I don't know how you could try this because it just doesn't seem like time would be on your side, but apparently you can take, if you're trying to go for the softball stage, for example, when you're making candy, while you're cooking it, you can take some of your mixture and drop it in water. And then if you pull it out, the little ball and squeeze it in your fingers, if it's soft, that's like the softball stage.
Right.
Or if it's hard and you can't squeeze it with your fingers, you've hit the hardball stage. But to me, that just seems weird because by the time you do all that work, you might have gone up a few more degrees.
Yeah. And, if you're cooking it probably in a slow enough heat, you could do that. But yeah, I just assume probably rely on the thermometer. And, you know, every thermometer is probably a little bit different too. So
yeah. And the thermometer we got isn't digital. It's just your regular old, it's not mercury, but it's like an old mercury thermometer. But the cool thing is instead of just degrees, which it gives you, it also has little markers all the way up the thermometer that with the stage is identified. So it's really easy to see what stage you're getting to.
Yeah. And even like the beginning of softball stage or in the end of softball, the beginning of the next stage and so on. I would say fudge is the one kind of candy where I wouldn't bother using a thermometer. And I think that's probably maybe because when I was a kid, that was something I helped make was fudge. So it feels like a good starter candy recipe to me. And as long as you follow the recipe and stir it and boil it for the amount of time, I don't think it's really necessary to use a thermometer for fudge.
So I think we've exhausted the thermometer talk. So do you want to just jump in and actually talk about making the candy in these two recipes that we used?
Yes, let's go for it.
Excellent. So do you want to start out with the pralines?
Yes. So I have to ask, were you inspired by my recent trip to New Orleans when I brought you home pralines to make these?
Kind of, but
yay, that's good to hear.
Yeah. So New Orleans is famous for pralines. I think that's where they were invented, if I'm not mistaken. But the first praline I ever remember eating, I was on a work trip to Savannah, Georgia, and I was down on, I think it's called River Street, which is kind of their old town historic with all the boutique shops and stuff. And I can't remember the name of the candy shop, but there were probably several, but I remember walking into one because it looked just like a cool place and they were giving away samples right at the front of pralines. And I'd never had one, but it's funny because in the back of my mind, like my dad's favorite ice cream flavor, whenever we would go to the Baskin Robbins was pralines and cream. And as a kid, I never ate that. It just sounded weird. And if my dad liked it, I probably wouldn't like it. So I never even knew what it was. So anyway, I tried one of these things and it was like a life-changing experience. It was really good. It was the best thing I'd probably ever eaten that looked like a cookie. I brought some home and it kind of stuck with me. And of course, here in Oregon, I don't think anybody sells them. You can't find them anywhere.
I don't think so. The first one I had was when one of my coworkers brought some home from New Orleans.
Yeah. So here in Oregon, where we're at, if you want a praline, you either have to, like you just a couple weeks ago or a couple months ago, you went to New Orleans, you brought one back. You have to order them online or you just have to make them yourself. So that's what I decided to do. So what's a praline? It's kind of it's really unique, I think. I don't really know if there's anything I could say it's like this because I've never run across anything like it. But just to describe what it is, they're actually quite easy to make. Mm-hmm. And I used Emeril Lagasse's creamy praline recipe. Really, the only ingredients that is involved, brown sugar, granulated sugar, heavy cream, unsalted butter, a little bit of water, and pecans. So that's not a very complicated ingredient list. And it's just all about throwing them in a pan, mixing them together. And this is where that candy thermometer thing comes in.
It's pretty quick to make too.
Yeah, it didn't seem like it took me that long to make. In fact, I had to make a couple of batches. But I want to say, I mean, there's really no prep time. It's just all measuring, and that takes about all of 5 minutes maybe with those ingredients. And then it's just constantly mixing those ingredients together in a heavy saucepan until you get to, I think it's some right at the softball stage, right around like between 238 and 240 degrees. So once you get to that point, I mean, you're just mixing like crazy because you want to burn, I guess. Once you get it to that point, that's actually when you add the pecans in and you take it off the burner. And then you just mix for about 2 minutes until it starts, you're kind of whipping air into the mixture almost. And then it starts to get, it goes from kind of a glassy look to kind of a opaque, kind of a dull look, the candy. And then you just literally drop them by spoonfuls onto like wax paper on a cookie sheet. And as they cool, they're ready to eat. I mean, there's no baking involved.
It's kind of, I guess the most similar thing would be peanut brittle or, you know, some kind of a nut brittle.
Yeah, except that they're not brittle mm-hmm. necessarily.
So you don't cook it near as long as you would brittle, because brittle obviously goes to like, I don't know.
The hard crack stage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So
it was the same, similar kind of idea. You're cooking the sugar and buttery ingredients, putting the nuts in at the end so that you don't burn the nuts while you're cooking the sugar.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, it was pretty simple. Now I made two batches because the first batch I followed the recipe, I thought, to the letter. And they looked really good when I first dropped them on the sheet. But when they started cooling, they had this really like really honeyish brown color. They were really good looking. And then when they started to dry, they started to get kind of these splotchy little white spots is probably the wrong word. They almost looked like stars.
Little starbursts.
Little starbursts, like under the surface. And actually, we still have some left. This was a couple of days ago we did this. So we have a couple left.
Not very many.
Not very many. Yes. And but they've become quite mottled, I guess, with that starburst. So the research I did on the internet said that that's probably when sugar cools after it's been cooked like that, the sugar crystals are trying to form back up and connect, and they're recrystallizing, I guess. So you get kind of these interesting little patterns. It doesn't affect the flavor, doesn't really affect the texture. It just kind of makes them look a little funky. So anyway, I did a second batch right away, and I thought I'd take them off. I thought maybe I went too high on the temperature, but that probably wouldn't have made a difference. Anyway, I tried it again, pulled them off a little earlier, like 4 degrees earlier, and they were a little less crystallized, but not much. In the end, I think they probably looked the same. So end result was they were delicious, and I probably could have eaten the whole batch in one sitting, but they just looked a little strange, but it didn't affect the flavor. And you tried them.
Oh yeah, they're really good. And it's just kind of a fun, different thing to have around at the holidays, at least for us on the West Coast, where it's something that you can't go out and buy at the store. That's kind of one thing my mom always says, why do you go to the trouble of making something if you can just buy it? But it's fun to make. It's a different, you know, unique thing to have around at the holidays. And you know, it's kind of time of year when you're splurging too and not really counting calories, which is kind of nice not to have to worry about sugar intake or how many calories you're counting for a little bit of time. So splurge, have something nice. They're very sweet.
Yeah, and I don't even want to know how many calories this one praline has. Ooh, I mean,
yeah.
I mean, butter, sugar, cream, and pecans.
Heavy cream.
Yeah, heavy cream.
Yeah.
But who cares? True. They're so good.
Yeah.
Another interesting thing I saw in my research, and again, most of the websites that went into any detail on how to make pralines, most of them said things like pralines are a mysterious thing, and it just sounds like you have to kind of have the quote unquote the touch or a little bit of luck to make them turn out just perfect. So one thing I read said you should never make them on a cloudy or a rainy day. You should only make them on a clear sunny day.
I think that's kind of true of most most candy, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, good luck here in December. So yeah. That doesn't happen in Oregon typically. So I guess we have to take it as it comes. I thought that was an interesting point that a couple of websites made.
Yeah, I think the humidity, I mean, I don't, you know, we don't have a lot of humidity, even if it's, you know, pretty wet here. So, but I think a lot of humidity can really affect your candy making.
Yeah, interesting. Anyway, pralines, easy to make. Again, with any candy, you really have to kind of be on the ball. This isn't something you can just start and, you know, go hang out and watch, you know, reruns of MASH and then come back and finish. I mean, yeah, it's constant attention to this stuff you're mixing up, but really easy to make, absolutely delicious. If you know people that haven't ever eaten them, you probably knock their socks off. I mean, really, if you gave them one of these things, they're just so delicious. So I'll put the recipe or the link to the recipe, to Emeril's recipe that I used, on our show notes at kitchencounterpodcast.com/11.
I have a question. Can you, so the ones that you made are about what, silver dollar size?
Oh no, a little bit bigger. They're probably like your typical cookie size, like mm-hmm. a couple inches across.
Could you make real small ones if you wanted to? You know, less calories.
You probably could. The challenge I found when I was spooning them out and dropping them on, so it called for a whole cup of pecan halves. Mm-hmm. So that really kind of bulked them up. So it was actually kind of hard to drop small ones out because the pecans kind of clumped up and made them kind of bigger. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. it wasn't easy to just get little bite-sized. I suppose if you crushed the pecans up so they weren't so bulky, maybe you could make smaller ones. But one of the nice things about the presentation are these pralines that have these big pecan halves kind of in them and on them. So I think they're okay size. It's just, who needs bite size? Anyway, so yeah, pralines, delicious. So you want to talk about, would you like to talk about salted caramels next?
Yes.
All right, go ahead.
So I made a couple of batches of caramels. The reason I made a couple batches is because the first one I burnt the sugar on. I followed the recipe exactly, and it says heat up the sugar and a little bit of corn syrup, a little bit of water. He'll put a link to the recipe in there. Heat it up to 320 degrees, exactly 320 degrees, and it'll turn a warm golden brown color. And take it off, add in heated up butter and cream and a little bit of vanilla. Stir that in and then heat that back up to whichever stage, you know, if it's softball or firmball, kind of right in between there. And I went exactly to 320 degrees, did that, but I don't think I was on the ball enough. And when I looked in the pan at the 320, because I was busy staring at the thermometer, when I looked in, it was much darker than just that warm golden brown caramel color. And sure enough, even though I followed the rest of the recipe exactly, when it cooled down and we tasted it, it had a really burnt sugar taste to it.
Yeah, I almost thought it tasted metallic. It was very bizarre.
Yeah, it definitely didn't taste right. So the second batch, I didn't go all the way to the 320 degrees. I took it off about 10 degrees early, and I was cooking a little slower too, so I wouldn't miss that mark. And that turned out much better. Oh, it tasted really good. Just a nice creamy caramel, a little bit of salt in that. So good. Sweet. Really, really good. But a couple of different recipes say, one says go to 240 and stop. One says if you want to go to 245 degrees and stop when you're doing that second one, the final cooking. But the recipe that I followed was the Food Network, Ina Garten's recipe. And she says go fully up to 248. And they were still maybe slightly soft. You could probably even go a little bit further. But they turned out pretty good. If you, they refrigerate really well, they freeze really well, they look really pretty. We wrapped them up in little squares of wax paper. And it looks like something you would buy at a candy store.
Yeah, they actually kind of look like saltwater taffies that you buy that are kind of wrapped. And that's kind of the presentation they ended up with. But it's interesting because if you've never made or had homemade caramel before, you might be thinking, oh, if you've ever had like those Kraft caramel squares that you can get around Halloween time that you can make for like, what do you dip the apples, caramel apples and stuff like that. It's not like that. Those are much more like milky or creamy, or there's something about those.
And they're harder too.
They're harder. Yeah, they're harder. So these that we made at room temperature, they're quite soft. Like if you were to pull it apart, it would almost be stringy, I would say. Mm-hmm. But delicious. And then so we put Florida Sel sea salt on top after it cooled down a bit, right? Mm-hmm. Did you mention that?
There was a little bit. No, I didn't. There was a little bit, I think it was, I can't remember, half a teaspoon or something in the recipe too, in the sugar. So it had a little bit of salt in it and then a little bit of salt sprinkled on top. Looks kind of nice. And then you could, I think on one of the links talks about dipping the caramels in chocolate when you're done. So if you want to, after you cut them up into little squares, you could dip them in chocolate too. That might be kind of fun. Or even just a, you know, half of them, a little diagonal chocolate dip would be kind of kind of a fun addition to it.
And did you say there was corn syrup?
Yes, there's a little bit of corn syrup in the initial, the corn syrup, sugar, and water you initially bring to a boil.
Okay. I was going to say the ingredients were almost identical to pralines.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
Except, well, of course you don't have pecans, but the corn syrup is a little different and there's no vanilla. But other than that, it's practically the same list of ingredients. I guess it's a little different, but...
Sugar, butter, cream.
Do you remember on episode 8 when you were here the first time and we were talking about chocolate, of course, and you said at one point you made some... I'm sure you thought it was a rhetorical question, but I filed it away. And you said, chocolate, is there anything better? And
what's the answer? Pralines?
Well, pralines are salted caramels, I think. I think these are better, actually.
But, better than chocolate?
I do, yeah.
I don't know. I think chocolate, caramels dipped in chocolate might be better.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe so.
I don't think I'd want to dip a praline in chocolate, though.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think those need it. And there's also another point I want to make, too, that I guess we should have mentioned at the beginning. With both of these recipes and pretty much with any candy recipe, I think where you're cooking over high heat or you're getting things at a real high temperature is to use a nice heavy pan. So if you don't have a saucepan that has a nice heavy bottom at least, or heavy all the way around, you might want, if you're going to do much candy making, you might want to look into getting one, because a heavier pan is going to conduct the heat much better. It's going to be a much more even heat. You're going to be much less likely to burn anything, because when you have those really thin pans, the heat goes right from your burner or your flame. It goes right through the pan into whatever you're cooking, and it could scorch candy quite easily. So try to get a hold of a good heavy saucepan, a good heavy stainless steel, or, you know, the pans that have like the multiple ply, like a lot of them now have steel with like a copper inside, or, you know, just the heaviest pan you can find. I think you'll be in better shape when you're making both of these recipes or any candy recipe.
That's pretty technical about the pans.
Well, I don't want people to have scorched caramels, darn it.
I have to say, and we were talking about this at work today, and one of the gals was telling me that she had a party or something last weekend. She provided the food and everybody else was bringing desserts, and somebody made a salted caramel sauce. So pretty much the same recipe, just not bringing it all the way up to the softball stage. And then they got store-bought cream puffs and then drizzled the salted caramel sauce over the cream puffs. So there's another idea you can do.
That sounds really good.
They said it was really, really good.
So that could be like the same application if you want to make like caramel sauce for ice cream, like for a sundae or something.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds really good.
Yeah. And we've made lots of other candies in the past over the years, some that I've never tried again. Like we tried making those fruit gels, like orange slices. We tried making those a couple years ago with fruit juice. That was kind of fun. I think it wasn't a strong enough flavor. I think we're used to really strongly artificially flavored candies. So the fruit juice and the orange gels wasn't quite as
And that's too tasty. Bad because like orange slice candies are – probably one of my top five favorite candies, like that you buy. They're just...
What about cherry slices?
Any of the fruit slices. Any of the fruit slices are really good. I really love those sun-kissed fruit gems.
I don't like those.
Oh, really? I think they're better than the fruit slices. Those are so good.
No, they're a little softer. It's that texture.
Yeah, it's because they use pectin. They actually use real fruit pectin.
Oh, so they're...
I'm just saying that. Somebody told me that, and that's... what I'm going with. Yeah, exactly. They're better for you. They're real fruit.
They're real fruit. That's the thing about candy making. Like I said, my mom would say, you know, why make something you can buy it? Because you can control it. You know what's going into it. You know the ingredients. You can customize, personalize, do whatever you want.
And it's super fun to give it to people and they go, I mean, it's like, wow, you made this? Exactly. And it's really kind of fun. And especially around the holidays, they make little, you know, you can wrap a few up and throw them in somebody's little gift box or whatever. So I would say pralines or salted caramel. We'll put the links to both of the recipes that we used this week in the show notes, again, at kitchencounterpodcast.com/11. That's the number 11. And I'll put the rest of the show notes in there too. I'll also put a link to a candy thermometer that we have on Amazon. So if you're interested, you can check it out there. And I can't think of anything else to say about pralines or caramels. Do you have anything else?
No, I can't think of anything else.
Okay, great. Well, that about does it for another episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Again, this will be the last episode before Christmas. So I just want to say Merry Christmas to everybody out there, or Happy Hanukkah, or Happy Kwanzaa, or just have a good Thursday night, whatever floats your boat. If you do want to catch future episodes of the show, you can go over to iTunes and subscribe. You can also do that on Stitcher Radio and TuneIn Radio. And of course, you can always come to the website at kitchencounterpodcast.com to listen to any of the episodes and catch all of the show notes. Until next time. Oh, I should also mention too that you can find me on Twitter at TKC Podcast and Facebook at facebook.com/kitchencounterpodcast. And of course, if you want to send an email, that's feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. All right, until next time, I hope you get into the kitchen and make some maybe salted caramels or pralines or anything else that you feel up to, and I'd love to hear about it. So send me an email and start making memories with family and friends. Happy cooking!